A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevepick.com. First full week of the new year, and a lot of things kind of rolling into place and getting us going. And that includes the January sale at Keeneland, which kicks off later, and Tony Lacy is going to join us because there's a lot going on at this sale. Then, of course, it'll be followed by FASIC, and new sale season is underway. This is an important sale. It's kind of a inside baseball kind of a sale. But broodmares, broodmare prospects, and in foal mares that'll be delivering, and key time because plenty of them, I'm sure we'll talk Wednesday, and there'll be 2 days of results with Sid. In fact, didn't Sid say? Yeah, he's going to be there. Given all the new stallions, it's an important sale because plenty of outfits are going to be acquiring mares to take to the new stallions. So, important to watch this one. There's also, and I did reference this, I don't know, whenever I saw the headline late last fall, there's a dispersal, which you know, very frequently when it comes to these kinds of winter sales and even the bloodstock sales in November, it can really kind of jazz up the offerings, but there's a real tinged of sadness portion, and there frequently is. I mean, a lot of times it's dispersals are, I think about our friend Paul Pompa, who we'll talk about in a minute. When the industry loses someone that's got a lot of bloodstock, this is the Generazios, and late Frank Generazio and wife Patricia. And so much success late in certainly in Frank's life, and there's going to be, I imagine, given how prolific the broodmare band has been these last 15 years, give or take, I imagine that the Generazio offerings are going to be well received. Let's put it that way. There's stallions always in this. Calumet has used this sale regularly to kind of prune their stallion roster. And assuming they all go right, Big Blue Kitten is in there. There's Jack Milton. Was acquired previously. I mean, which happens a lot when it becomes apparent. When the catalog comes out, a lot of times there's some outfits will roll into action. So we're going to talk to Tony Lacy in about 20 minutes, and we'll set the stage and get the new season in the sales arena, get it going. Speaking of sales, too, I have not had a chance to follow up with Aaron Halliwell and see how everything went with the TCA. Speaking of auctions, right? All right, I'll get some answers on that front. I probably should start with the weekend's biggest story, which came at least didn't completely. We didn't get all the answers, but we certainly got the stage set. for the Eclipse Awards, and I imagine we'll have a couple of follow-up discussions to the announcement from Saturday morning. And there were, let's say, for starters, there were no surprises, quote unquote, and then there were quasi surprises, or how do you want to refer to them? If not quasi surprises, disappointments, I think might also be employed here with the way in which some of the decisions came out in terms of the top threes. And I don't want to launch into a tirade or a diatribe. There's a few things about the way this was established for the end of the month for the hardware distribution that just that mystifies me. And I actually discussed this with Andy Serling Saturday, and Andy told me I must have been silly thinking that Modern Games would turn up as a finalist only in the turf division. But he turns up as a finalist in the three-year-old male division. And I don't get it. I'm sorry. And maybe it's my approach to this, and I'm certainly someone who's willing to vote for a turf horse. I discussed this the other day, right? I'm quite willing to vote and include a nice turf type, and I'll go back to Lady Eli, who I voted for as top two-year-old filly and top three-year-old filly, to no avail. And so it's not a bias against turf horses. But when you've got established classic, particularly classic 3-year-olds, and this is much heavier on the 3-year-old front than anywhere else. When you've got Epicenter, Taba, and Cyberknife, I'm sorry. Those are your three-year-old finalists. I mean, and Epicenter and Taba are the obvious champion candidates. I'm sorry, Modern Games. I don't care that he won the mile, a subpar version of it, or that he won the Woodbine Mile. I'm sorry, that doesn't supersede the most important glamour division that we've got. So that's irksome presence number one. I just don't get it. And the people that are the people that are saying, well, he was the best 3-year-old in North America. No, he wasn't. It's incomprehensible that anybody would take his two North American starts and somehow weave that into an argument that he was the best 3-year-old in America. Are you nuts? I mean, it's just laughable. You want to put him third, maybe? And even that I find just, I'm aghast at. When you had a horse I'm sure I have to qualify myself because I've been a friend of Al Gold's for 20 years, and it'll people be, well, Bick's close to Al Gold. Okay, it doesn't have to be just Al Gold. Well, and this, you're going to hear the same thing, and you can say, well, he's been friends with Lee Einstein. That's true too. But let's include the turf part. Nation's pride. The finalists are based on first place votes. This is crazy. If there's no horse that, let's say, is third that in first place voting, then it goes to, you know, then it goes to the judges' scorecards. Casa Creed, with his two excellent grade ones, certainly merited being the third turf horse behind Rebel's Romance and Modern Games. You wanted to vote for Modern Games, okay. I voted for Rebel's Romance, and I had no huge conviction between the two. But Nation's Pride? I'm sorry. That it's just ridiculous. I'm happy for Cody's Wish to find a spot in this. I guess it's going to come down to him, and maybe, I don't know, maybe he outpoints Elite Power. I don't know. Anyway, I looked at the printed out the finalists, and I had to just look. I just stared at it. Then the texts and phone calls started by about 11:40 something. It's just bizarre, and I really don't understand the motivation in some cases, because if a horse's season merits inclusion, and you have, and this is something that I typically talk about when it comes to breeders and owners, you've got an opportunity to pay tribute and show appreciation for the contribution that the individuals associated with the horse itself, of course, and who's associated with it, you have a chance to show the appreciation for what they bring to the game, for the money that they invest in the game, for their longevity in the game. I'm sorry. I mean, I've always been an advocate for spreading the wealth in terms of this. I mean, So when it comes to some people that I'm closer to than others, Lee Heinsidler and Al Gold, when you have a chance to put their horses into this mix, whether you're friends with them or not, I think you go out of your way to do it. I've said this, chance to honor. I was delighted that Jane Lyon turned up in the breeder. That's wonderful. Godolphin, Stone Street, and Summerwind. Like I wrote on Twitter, I doubt that she wins based on the way these votes seem to, the way the chips kind of fall when it comes to this. But it's very nice that she's a finalist. She does a fabulous job, and that's the perfect example. I'm just amazed. And there's always a couple of annoyances or things that kind of just make you shake your head a little. Quick rundown, Cave Rock, Fort for, and Victoria Road. Okay. That's not Victoria Road's. Okay. That was a nice performance by Victoria Road. So, okay. I guess I used Blazing Sevens, but okay. On the 2-year-old filly, and this was, it's always laid out alphabetically. I mean, Wonder Wheel obviously is your champion. Leave No Trace. Delighted that Leave No Trace turns up in here, and Meditate, kind of the counterbalance to Victoria Road. That's cool. The three-year-olds again, Epicenter, Modern Games, and Taba. The three-year-old fillies, Nest, Secret Oath, and Tuesday. I went Spenderella. Tuesday, though, is absolutely, you know, I get it. Modern Games, I don't, but okay. Again, I mean, you have a chance. You know, Spenderella. It's funny. you're gonna acknowledge Tuesday. Okay. I guess Spenderella didn't get any credit. You know, for her campaign and I don't know, I for going abroad. I if you're going to vote for these horses that come from abroad, older male, Flight Line, Life is Good, Olympiad, and I think that's that was the universal lane. 3-year old, or excuse me, older female, Clarier, Malathat, and Goodnight Olive. And this one kind of surprises me. And it's okay. I mean, obviously Malathat's your winner, but that means that Goodnight Olive got a bunch of votes for as the older dirt female. How? She's the female sprinter champion. Nobody needed to interject her into the older female. She won two races, which were, you know, frequently enough for the filly and mare sprint on a regular basis. You know, late season charge and winning the Breeders' Cup is good. You know, Lee Power probably is going to, maybe, I don't know. I voted for Jack Christopher because I thought he had enough of a resume and was the most exciting and best sprinter. You know, for the majority of the year that I saw, I didn't think he was going to end up being a finalist, but that's how I wanted to acknowledge his season. But, you know, shoehorning Cody's Wish into Sprinter is okay. Goodnight Olive, Caravelle, Echo Zulu. Okay, that's fine. Kind of an incomplete year. I included Matarea, who also had an incomplete year. And, you know, that happens. The Turf Horses, as mentioned, Modern Games, Rebel's Romance, and Nation's Pride. Eye-rolling. In Italian, Regal Glory. I mentioned Paul Pompa earlier. Warlike Goddess. They felt like the three, and it seems, I tell you, that's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting how the three votes spread out. Obviously, the three jumpers, there was never a question. Down Royal, Hewick, and Snap Decision. The owner, Godolphin, seems just overwhelming. Peter Brandt, who seemed pretty obvious, and Seth Klarman, Klarovich. I went Judmont, but, you know, a third. I mean, I voted for Klarovich for year after year after year until finally the bricks and mortar got Klarovich over the finish line. The breeders, as mentioned, Godolphin, Stone Street, and Summerwind. That's what I went with, too, actually. I went Summerwind, Godolphin, Stone Street. I thought this was a slight surprise. Steve Asmussen among the trainers. And, I mean, I think we all agree that it's coming down to, you know, Todd Pletcher and Chad Brown. I was a little surprised. I did not think this was a vintage Asmussen camp year. This was Bill Mott, and frankly, Bill Mott not far off from, you know, shouldering his way into the argument with Todd and Chad. Yeah. So I was a little surprised Steve Asmussen made it as the third finalist. And make no mistake, he's the third finalist because Chad and Todd are that's a Frazier Ali. The jocks, no surprises here. IRAD, Flavian Pratt, Joel Rosario, And then when it came to The Apprentice, Yuron Barbosa, Vicente Del Cid, it's just kind of fun to say Del Cid, and Jose Gomez. I wanted to get Kylie Jordan into the picture, but if you see her, tell her I voted for her third. So there you go. There's the annual screed. Because there's always something that bugs me about about the way this thing comes off, and I'm sure that that's one of the fun things actually about the whole concept is that there is no format, so you interpret it the way you want as somebody involved in the process. They say, as we say in Philadelphia, trust the process, but, you know, some processes are less trustworthy than others. Yeah. All right. Racing. Before I reach Tony Lacey, and by the way, Christophe Clement will join us, and looking forward to Chris, who got off to a very good start last weekend, and I got a handful of stuff to discuss with. Where's my pad? There it is. No matter what time I get up, no matter how early, I still can't straighten out this desk ahead of showtime. Clement at 10:30 this morning, and Christophe will I think you know, share some thoughts, and I could bring in Jimmy Ryerson as well. Jim Ryerson! about the Generazios. I mean, I think when Frank passed, we had a nice parade and had several people that visited to say deservedly wonderful things about him. But this will be a set of silks that you'll miss, you know, if they're going to be gone completely. And I haven't talked to Christophe, so I don't know if Patricia Generazio is going to, you know, stay on with a couple of runners that are in training. I kind of hope so. That pink and green jacket, really, over the last, I mean, it obviously dates a while back, but gosh, the last 15 plus years, 20 years, so good. And you know, had such an interesting approach and in terms of their own breeding program. So Christophe will talk about the Generazio dispersal, as will, I'm sure, Tony Lacey when he joins us here shortly. But in addition, Christophe last week with those wins to start the season down at Gulfstream, and I think we got to talk about the year. Who was it that told me about this? That I mentioned? I think it was Dave Granick, who said when he was looking through the owner, you know, sometimes you got to. You know, and here's another cause celeb when it comes to Gary Barber. You know, you have to sift through some ownership, you know, partnership standings and do some work. There's a concept. Do some work to figure out, you know, who's had their hand in a lot of. A lot more wins than just the raw, you know, one name, one name on the line. I mean, and Gary Barber certainly, you know, sends out a good share of horses under his own name, but he's also, you know, in a hat full of different pair-ups. So Dave made the case and made the point that Dean and Patty Reeves had an unbelievable year last year. And they also, I mean, they got plenty of horses in their own name, but they also are, you know, tied on with all. there aren't too many people that own and participate in the game that have more fun than, and mix it up with partners that are equally fun. It starts when you see Reeves Thoroughbreds and R.A. Hill starting out on the ownership line, you know there's some fun being had. It ran. I always get. Where was he actually? I didn't even notice. I always get a New Year's greeting from Randy Hill, and it could come from anywhere. It came from Thailand, I think, a year ago, right? Was he? I think he was in Thailand or in Singapore or some crazy place. But anyway, so gonna let Chris Clement riff on. And of course, last week, City Man won the Fort Lauderdale, and that's a hometown. That's a hometown favorite, being a mucho macho man for the Reeves. And Miss J. McKay won that Abundancia. Haven't even mentioned yet any of the race weekend results. And, of course, yesterday, the three-year-old races, Mandela with that ice dancing and Flavian. And, boy, she got bet like she opened it 1-5 or 2-5. Then went out there and was confidently handled. The upset in the Sham, and of course, a couple of things happened that I didn't realize really. I was watching the Eagles game, and so I wasn't really watching everything going on. I put together, just to keep my mind occupied before the Eagle game, put together the pick five, pick four at Santa Anita, and had a really nice day on Saturday. We got to talk about the new Coast to Coast, which we referred to the other day, and got off to a good start. And it's going to be a fun. Let's be honest. It's the Magna Five, Coast to Coast. It's the Magna Five reborn. Paid $15,000 yesterday. Reincarnate the good magic, and it didn't. I mean, literally, the race was being run, and I winced because I did this in the as it happens when Justique scratched out of the other day when John Sheriff let it be known that Justique was coming out of the Santa Inez. So I thought, okay, well, not that Justique was going to be part of the pace, but I was looking at it and I thought, can Parity wire this field? And so I ended up picking Parity, who barely lifted a hoof, but it was the Sham that needed to have the deck reshuffled in your mind. Talk about this all the time. When there's a scratch, Speedboat Beach scratches. And Baffert said he just wasn't, he wanted to wait. So he's going to San Vicente it with him, which makes some sense, 7/8. When that happened, Reincarnate became the obvious candidate on the front end. And I didn't even, 16-1. I'll tell you something else. He did not have. I got to call Tony. He did not have a much of a glowing workout report, and so I ended up favoring Newgate as the other Baffert, and he ran okay, obviously, but Andy Harrington, I think, had said, I don't have it on the screen. I could go get it. Said that he was kind of a down the road type. That he was kind of coming along and was a little immature. And I saw that, and so I thought, okay, we'll come back to him later in the winter. Eesh. And then he ends up. I don't even know what were the splits. Let's go to the videotape. Well, he went fast enough. I mean, 22-1, 45-2, 109-2. And they started to slow down. 122-3. But Newgate, who was last in the front half, first half of the race, could not get by Reincarnate. Reincarnate. Juan Hernandez holding Newgate safe. So a National Treasure was clunking along. And then, of course, you had, you know, we should check with Mark Glad. It appeared last night that Spun Intended was okay, but something was amiss in the stretch. And you saw, and it, not that Paxawalop didn't seem like Paxawalop was going anywhere. Where he's going is back to the turf. But Mike Smith steering Spun Intended off, you know, to the right and wrapping up on him. And I think I heard, the last I saw, but I really should check with, I'll reach out to Mark and we'll, Mark Glad, we'll see about, what more they know this morning. But anyway, those were yesterday's big highlights. And then of course on Saturday, Lucan Knight, we got to get, Michael W. McCarthy, MWM. We got to get him in here. Lucan Knight, who was kind of a universal, was kind of the universal lean in the Jerome. Not that Arctic Arrogance didn't run. He ran fine. Ran absolutely fine. 85 buyer, by the way, for Lucan Knight. And Atris wins the Queens County with Law Professor, who was very good. And those two contributing to... it's not going to be the biggest pick six we ever hit, but 1500 was okay. Plus the consos. So I hope I know a couple of you. I got some notes. A couple of people came along, and that was all right. Yeah, you know, it just shows you when it comes to this game, when it comes to playing horses. You know, and you get into a you know, a slump, a funk, whatever. And I was in a funk second half of the year. I mean, I have since opening day at Santa Anita have had more four figure hits than the previous 6 months combined. So that's, you know, you everybody handles the misfires a little differently, but I tried to play through it. The yips, right? Where's the golfers? Were they the yips? I have no idea what they were. All I know is I had a couple of bad beats during that run, but I can't even say it was, you know, bad beats and bad luck. It was just unbelievable. It just couldn't close out a sequence. Kept getting beat in the last legs just crazy. So anyway, that appears to be behind us. And just in time, because believe me, I was getting a little, yeah. That was sehitzed, as we say in Yiddish. Tony Lacey is going to join us. It's sales season again. It comes around so quickly. Tony, Happy New Year.
And to you, Steve. Yeah, it doesn't seem that long ago we were chatting, but that's the nature of the sales season.
Well, you get about a 45-minute break. After November, and everybody comes back fresh from New Year's and from the holiday. And Tony, I mean, just looking at the catalog and the storylines, it does feel, and especially with all the stallions that are going to be standing and covering their first crop of mares, it feels like you're poised to really get the sales season off strong.
It's looking like that, Steve. I think we've got to be optimistic coming off a strong fall sales season between yearlings. Obviously, the race meet and the November sale. You know, I think we expect the momentum to sort of carry through to January. January's historically been a great sale to purchase at, but also to sell. Great trading environment. We've got representatives here from all over the U.S. as well as internationally. So we're optimistic, but again, looking forward to a strong and hopefully healthy 2023.
The variety of stock that this sale attracts, and any bloodstock sale can be influenced by dispersals. Christophe Clément is going to join us at 10:30 to kind of honor Frank and Patricia Generazio. I imagine that their stock is going to be well received.
I would imagine so. When it takes, as you know, it takes many of a group like this. It takes many generations of cultivation to bring a broodmare band and stock to this level. So it's always sad to see people retiring from the industry. But again, you understand as things change. But again, it allows others to capitalize on their hard work over the years. And listen, we're proud to represent their stock, and we look forward to getting good results for them.
Lay out the format here the next few days.
Well, it's laid out over we have two books over 4 days, so 2 days obviously per book. There's a little bit of a difference potentially between books one and two, but it's a fairly consistent format where we've got some nice stock in book one, but again, we got some really, really sort of interesting individuals in book two as well, especially through the supplements as well, because we've as we try to accommodate as many of our clients as possible, we can't take some supplements in, and indeed some of the nicer stock into book one, and it's spread into book two. So I think you'll find that there's going to be an energetic, competitive, buying environment for the next 4 days. It's always been historically been a great sale. And again, especially I remember back when I was dealing with Barbara Hunter's stock, we sold Cortana at Snowtop Mountain here. We got a million at or just below for both of them each. And it's historically a great spot. I think it's coming into a new year, new tax year. People got a little bit of a rest over the holidays. I think we're all a little bit refreshed to some degree, and it's a little closer to the breeding season, so you're able to plan to see what, after looking at some of those young stallions after coming off the track, people are encouraged.
Well, and that also is part of the storyline too, because stallion prospects are available. Be interesting to see where some of these names end up out into the regional market, or we'll see, or even international.
Absolutely. The one thing, the Kentucky environment is very, very competitive on the staff for us in the stallion business. And it's not that any stallion that can be very viable in many other jurisdictions just sometimes struggles in this jurisdiction, which is not, it's no slam on them at all. So I think for whether it's an international farm or a more regional farm just looking for a stallion that has a proven record and has potential for their programs, I think it's really exciting and a great timing as well, just before we start off the breeding season.
Wow, and as I referenced, with the kind of stallions that are standing, are going to be standing their first seasons, it'll be interesting to track the broodmare prospects. Then there's some bellwether opportunities that we see, which is first crop from last year, stallions that were introduced in 2022. They've got mares in foal, and it's always interesting to see, who buys what when it comes to those.
Well, and hope springs eternal, and I think you'll always find that in people that get into the competitive environment of November, is when everybody steps back and looks at how the market trends have reacted to certain sires, what sires have been popular, what people have really latched onto, and now people get a fresh opportunity to pick up something by some of those stallions that they felt like, well, I got shut out in November, and let's try again. And so I think it's a great way to showcase these young stallions for breeders as well, because they see what type of foals each stallion is getting, and it allows them to make a more educated judgment on what to breed to as they move into this breeding season.
Well, and one of the other things, of course, we've got yearlings. We've got weanlings that a week ago became yearlings. So the short yearling market gets its kind of baseline established.
Absolutely, and again, for a pinhooker, you've got probably two months less of overheads for any potential investments. So you see that. You see all the pinhookers out there looking at the traffic on the short yearlings has been really encouraging. And I think the consigners have a sense of optimism that there is plenty of money out there. And this is if you've got I don't think mediocrity is getting rewarded, which is not a bad thing. But if you've got quality, I think you get your opportunity to gain a premium is as good as ever.
Well, the atmosphere will undoubtedly be crackling. People have to be a little bit more bundled up than they were in September or in November.
Well, a little bit, but to be quite honest, as January goes, this is good. This is pretty darn good. So we'll take it. And the rain stayed away. It's in the 30s and 40s, but a couple of weeks ago here it was wind chills of minus 30, so I think it's almost like bathing suit weather.
Well, exactly. I mean, tromping up and down the hill with that weather would have been you really had to be hungry for the market.
That's for the hardened.
Exactly. Well, best of luck to everybody for the consigners and those seeking any number of opportunities, whether it's the babies that we're going to be seeing and these short yearlings. We've got mares in foal, and the results are always important and interesting. Tony, hope it's a great sales season, and it starts in about 15 minutes.
Yes, it does. Everybody's getting in place, and we're getting ready to rumble.
I'll let you do the same. Tony Lacey, everybody. Nice to set the stage. Tony, thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Great to have him. Great being on. Bye.
Tony Lacey and the Keeneland sales season. Not just the Keeneland sales season, but everybody's sales season. And just looking up and down here, kind of perusing the catalog. And be interesting to see what Sid's got to say. Scott Hazleton is on site, I see, from the notes. So the FanDuel, they'll do some cut-ins, I imagine. And we'll see what Chris, I wonder if Chris is, be interesting. I imagine he might be there, right? Probably. The covering, let's pick out a couple of those names. Here, some covering sires, for instance, that from their first go-around, essential quality. And Nick's Go, you're going to have Nick's Go in fold types. Yoppin, there's another one, right? Yeah, there's a couple of the first crops. And, of course, if you're watching, you're watching for the foal season. The first few, right? The first few babies are starting to hit the ground and make their way, get their pictures taken, right? It's always fun. Going to catch up with Mig in 15, and we got to get to Mig right. I was going to reach for another visitor, but I think we better wait because I don't want to get I don't want to cut anybody short because Richie's got a tight schedule this morning. So we got to take got a case. We got to take the break on time like we used to back when we were responsible. A responsible radio outfit. Well, it's different because what's happened is we're produced out of an XM studio now, and there at one time we absolutely had to take the breaks within a window at the top of the hour, and even going way back at the bottom of the hour, you had to be within a certain window. But now they throw the switch at 9 and they turn the switch off at noon. And whatever happens in those 3 hours, they don't care. we can act. There we go. And Casey's explaining something to me. I'm not sure what. Oh, there you go. Casey used to have to send them a signal to let them know we were getting ready to break. And that because there were, you know why that was? That was when half of the breaks, they would run commercials and half the breaks we would. But then, you know, when XM was folded into the whole thing, that changed. So anyway, so we will leave it at, we used to leave at, right, 56:30? You would have to figure that this would not be my strength when it comes to those elements, the way we've done it over the years. All right, let's look at a couple of things that, I'll save the New York stuff for Rich, and Maybe this win by Law Professor will be the breakthrough to get Rob Attriss on. Who you know, people say who's the toughest guest? Rob Attriss. I never seem to be able to land Rob. It's the craziest thing. We'll get Rob. Maybe this is the key because this Law Professor has been very good, very consistent. You know who I do want to mention, because I'm going to definitely reach out to Robertino Diodoro, who won the Pippin on Saturday. Lovely ride. And he also, last week, hit 3,000 wins? 3,000. So, nice, hell of a milestone, obviously. We will save those conversations Well, Richard Mandela too. We got to get to Mandela. How about a quick survey of the Cal Cup day, the Cal Cup racing on Saturday? Since I already mentioned yesterday's results, you had a couple of outfits doubling up, right? You know who also? How about the run that Manny Franco went on Friday into Saturday into holy cow! I stopped keeping track at some. I think he had won 9 races in 15 over a course of 15 mounts. He won 9. Yeah, it was something. Saturday, the Don Valpredo, the sprint that started everything off. The Chosen Vron, very tough, but I'll tell you, had to work at it. And Hector Berrios, Eric Kruljack, and Sondereka, and Kruljack, and who else? A bunch of partners. Richard Thornburg. Robert Fetkin. This is a Tiz Molly Vronsky, the now 5 years old, and that was his 9th career win. He's tough. Yeah, but he had to work at it. Big City Lights gave him the Mandela, gave him everything, you know, he could muster. He had the Sunshine Millions, and as part of that sequence that included the the first of the Coast to Coasts, and I thought Big Summer. I used two horses in there, and not including Alice Marple, and Big Summer, and Joe Bravo. Very, very nice effort for Carla Gaines. In fact, Carla with a pair of Cal Cup Day wins. This was the Sunshine Million Turf Sprint, but she also won the Nightcap too, right, with the Unusual Heat Turf. Coalinga Road with Johnny, and that was a terrific race. Coalinga at 7-2, Harris Farms, the Harris team. Quality Road, six-year-old Coalinga. And that was his fourth career win. So Carla, who went into the day, I think, she was winless going into the day. And she breaks out with a pair of stake wins. The one that was a little agonizing grazed my heart. Jeff Mullins, this for the Mark and Patricia Cuffer Trust and Webb Family Trust. The Grazin three-year-old wins the Oaks in a harrowing photo with Sell the Dream. And I needed, personally, I needed Sell the Dream in there to hit that first Coast to Coast. But grazed my heart, upset the apple cart at 6-1. And boy, that was, I mean, that was close. It's funny, live, you just don't, you know, you're sitting at home and you're watching on the computer and, you know, you're leaning it. Live, I thought Sell My Dream held on, and I think was only paying like $280 with Sell the Dream, something like that. Grazed My Heart bounced the payout to 1,017. So congratulations to those that hit and got the Coast to Coast five. Off to a good start. And then yesterday, even better, 15,000. And we'll go through those sequence. But it was a fun day Saturday. And did I miss any? Oh, what about the Cal Derby? The Cal Derby. You had Thirsty John held on. This was the Stay Thirsty Colt for Peter Miller and partners Eugene Zondlow, Terry Levenger, and Tom London. Levenger bred this one, too, out of a discreet cat mare. Thirsty John wins the Cal Cup Derby. In just a second start, was a debut winner when Walter Solis had him. That was back in May. And got ready down at St. Louis Ray. Came up to Santa Anita, had a nice, easy half mile getting ready for this. And the public actually had this right, more or less. Giver Not a Taker was favored just over 3-2. Then came Thirsty John, just under 5-2. And Pazurando, right at 5-2. So, second choice, Thirsty John wins the Cal Cup Derby. And the Oaks, I told you, grazed my heart. A Grazin bred by Cicero Farms and Bachelor Family Trust. And as Frank said, with each Calbred race, pays to have a Calbred? Pays to be a Calbred? I think that was the right. Yeah. So that was the other action on Saturday. That gets us awfully close to the break. And we got to talk about Gulfstream 2 as part of that Saturday action, and the Dania Beach, where you had a minor, that was a little bit of an upset, right? Candidate and Arno Delacour winning the Dania Beach. Cairo Consort in the first start for Todd Pletcher was very good. And I singled at 1-2, frankly. she was challenged a little bit late. That Stephanie's Charm, who we kind of liked as the right price underneath Cairo Consort. But Cairo Consort, the Cairo Prince, Frankfurt Park Farm. This is Rapoli in Town and Country. And they scooped this one up late last year out of the, Nathan Squires had this filly at the start of her career. And she was a pricey purchase originally, and looks to have a nice future. Got a moderate fig, but basically right in line with what she's been running. And on the boy side, candidate 73 for Cairo Consort and an 86 for Candidate, who also did it on the front end. Major Dude was trying to make up ground, but just wasn't getting there. So, and actually, the 1720 was a nice price on Candidate in there. So, there was something else at Gulfstream that I know I saved. Oh, yesterday, I got a reason to call Dale Romans, which we love, right? Cyclone Mischief yesterday. Yeah, got to check the fig on that. All right, let's do this. Case, let's take the break because I got to get right to Mig on time. Can't screw this up, all right? Because he's got, I think he's got to take Gabby to the, Gabrielle's got to go to the airport later, all right? So, first hour in the books. Christophe Clément will join us later, but Mig is going to join us next. Back after a break. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. All day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product.